The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
This morning, he laid into Omarosa tweeting, "When you give a crazed, crying lowlife a break and give her a job at the White House, I guess it just doesn't work out. Good work by General Kelly for quickly firing that dog."
That is so weird. That is so weird that Trump uses dog as an insult. He should love dogs. You don't have to pay to watch them pee. Who's a good boy? Who's a good boy? Although firing dogs is kind of a recurring theme in Trump's tweets, he's used the phrase "fired like a dog" in tweets about David Gregory, Chuck Todd, Bill Maher, and Glenn Beck. He's pretty excited about dogs getting fired for a man who's afraid of getting impooched. So that's it. The president categorically denies saying the N-word and says that Omarosa is a lying dog for implying he did. And this afternoon, at the White House press briefing, Sarah Huckabee came down firmly on the side of, Jim?
Can you stand at the podium and guarantee the American people they'll never hear Donald Trump utter the N-word on a recording in any context?
I can't guarantee anything, but I can tell you that the president addressed this question directly. I can tell you that I've never heard it.
Just to be clear, you can't guarantee it.
Look, I haven't been in every single room.
Oh, God. Wow.
Is there a special room where he says it? Please, please, please tell me it's not the Lincoln bedroom. But Huckabee insisted that despite the fact that the president has had a long string of insults for African Americans, this has nothing to do with race.
This has absolutely nothing to do with race and everything to do with the president calling out someone's lack of integrity. The fact is the president's an equal opportunity person that calls things like he sees it.
Unreal.
Yes.
Unreal.
Yes. No, it has nothing to do with race. He's an equal opportunity insulter. And Omarosa continued her Trump-a-palooza world tour this afternoon when she went on the MSNBC to discuss details from her book, and she spilled the tea.
There's a lot of corruption that went on, both in the campaign and in the White House. And I'm going to blow the whistle on all of it.
All of it? All of it? Be careful, Omarosa. You wouldn't want to damage your relationship with the president. He might not hire you four more times. Then she got to the good stuff.
You were instructed, according to your book, to bring up the emails at every point you could at the end of the 2016 campaign.
Correct.
Hillary Clinton's emails.
Yes, that was our talker.
Did Donald Trump know about those emails before they came out?
Absolutely.
He knew about them?
Yes.
He knew what was coming out before WikiLeaks released them?
Wait, that is a massive revelation. The emails that Russia hacked, that WikiLeaks leaked, Donald Trump somehow knew before they were actually released. Somewhere in Washington, Robert Mueller is yelling, spoiler alert. Come on. But Omarosa didn't just accuse the president of being a traitor to his country. She also accused him of being a bad friend.
He talked about all of the people around him. If you were in the room with him, you'd leave the room. For instance, he would call Betsy DeVos Ditzy DeVos. When General Kelly left the room, he had a nickname for him.
Anybody that was in his world,
because of his small ability to communicate, he would give them these derogatory nicknames.
Yes, he had derogatory names for everybody. Some of them are really cruel. I hear he called this one guy Donald Trump Jr.
And that's as derogatory as it gets. Oh, boy. Yeah, we needed an extra long dose of Stephen Colbert there to get us started. We got a lot of territory to cover today. Tim Canova will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. In case the name sounds familiar, you're going, why do I know that name? Tim Canova, 2 years ago, ran against Debbie Wasserman Schultz for her congressional seat here in South Florida. It's the next district over from me. And he came up a little short, but then there was a problem with the supervisor of elections destroying some ballots before Tim's campaign had a chance to look at it. We'll get into all that, and we'll see how his campaign to unseat her this year is going. So we'll talk to Tim Canova at the bottom of the hour. But there is so much news going on today. Yesterday I was bemoaning the fact that there wasn't a lot. Today there is. So let's jump right into it, shall we?
I read the news today.
Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, the first item comes from just moments ago. Breaking news. I guess I need a breaking news, Chiron. At today's White House press briefing, which just wrapped up, went a whopping 20 minutes or so, Sarah Sanders announced that Trump is revoking former CIA Director John Brennan's security clearance. Brennan, of course, is a critic of his. Sanders says Brennan has exhibited, quote, erratic conduct and behavior. And she added that Brennan has conducted frenzied commentary. Why does it sound to me like she's talking about her boss? Anyway, it was just yesterday that John Brennan tweeted, "It's astounding how often you fail to, obviously to the president. It's astounding how often you fail to live up to minimum standards of decency, civility, and probity. Seems like you will never understand what it means to be president, nor what it takes to be a good, decent, and honest person. So disheartening, so dangerous for our nation." And the next day, Trump revokes his security clearance. Coincidence? Maybe. Sanders went through a list of other people that about whom Trump is evaluating whether or not to take action. The list includes James Clapper, Jim Comey, General Michael Hayden, Sally Yates, Susan Rice, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, and Bruce Orr. Bruce Orr, who still works there. Comey and McCabe no longer have clearance. Sanders says Trump may prevent people who no longer have them from reobtaining clearances. You notice they're all, first of all, aside from Comey and, well, I don't know about Clapper. But again, these are all critics of Trump's. There you go. Silencing their First Amendment rights. Unbelievable. Moving on, attorneys representing one-time Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort rested their case yesterday without calling any witnesses on his behalf. They put on no defense. Manafort also declined to testify for himself. MSNBC has more.
The defense has rested. They did not bring any witnesses. And it's important to remember that they don't have to bring any witnesses. It is the burden of the government to show that beyond a reasonable doubt what Paul Manafort did was criminal. The defense does not have to show anything to the contrary. He's presumed innocent. And it could be that really, if they tried to bring forth character witnesses, it wouldn't do enough for the jury. What they want to do is plant a seed of doubt on every one of these counts, whether that be bank fraud or tax evasion. They want enough for the jury to say on each of these 16 counts, perhaps that's not the full story. Maybe what the prosecution is saying shouldn't be believed because of the way the defense was in the cross-examination. Yesterday, they were somewhat successful in how they cross-examined some people, putting some doubt on whether or not Manafort actually committed bank fraud, for example. But another key piece of this, Andrea, is that this is coming after a 2.5-hour recess, another time where the judge met privately with the jury, and we don't know what was said. We don't know if there are issues with the jury that could be big enough to send this entire thing into a mistrial and to make this conversation I'm having with you a moot point.
Attorneys from both sides made closing arguments today. I think it's all over. Today is the 12th day of the trial, by the way. After that, the case goes to the jury. But regardless of the outcome, Manafort's legal problems will continue through the fall. Manafort and his former business associate, Konstantin Kilimnik, will go on trial in Washington, D.C. in September on charges that they illegally lobbied on behalf of Viktor Yanukovych, the former president of Ukraine and an ally of Russia. Although the House remains on recess until after Labor Day, the Senate returned to work today after a short summer break, prompted by Jeff Flake just leaving the country. So at least he did something right there. Senate Republicans get back to the business. They hope to confirm two more federal appeals court judges by the end of this week, adding to a record-breaking string of 24 appellate judges installed since Trump was sworn in. Yesterday was primary day in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Connecticut, and Vermont, and some history was made on a great night for progressives. We'll talk, get in depth with Howie Klein about all this tomorrow. But just to bring you up to date on some of the races. In Wisconsin, ironworker Randy Bryce will square off against Republican Brian Steele, S-T-E-I-L, Steele, a former Paul Ryan aide who was endorsed by the speaker in a bid to take Ryan's seat. In Minnesota, Senator Tina Smith, who replaced Al Franken when he resigned last year, held off a primary challenge from former Republican and Bush administration ethics lawyer Richard Painter. Tina Smith will face Republican State Senator Karen Housley in the general in Minnesota's first ever Senate matchup between two women. Former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty was unsuccessful in his bid to try to win his old job back. He lost the primary. Aww. In Minnesota's 5th district, the very progressive Ilhan Omar beat out the establishment candidates convincingly. So another progressive winning there. Keith Ellison won the Democratic primary to run for Minnesota Attorney General, while the DNC is reviewing allegations from his ex-girlfriend of domestic abuse. We'll see where that goes. A sad story, no matter how you cut it. Vermont Democrats nominated Christine Hallquist as their candidate for governor, making her the first transgender candidate to win a major party's nomination for a state's chief executive post.
You ran as a transgender woman. You are one of more than 400 LGBTQ candidates running in this cycle. How important is it that LGBTQ folks have a seat at the table in politics?
Well, you know, I like to talk about all marginalized communities. You know, certainly one of the things I learned in my transition is, you know, it's one thing to talk about the gender hierarchy. It's mm-hmm. the other thing to experience it. So I think we should be talking about all marginalized communities. You know, it's certainly, if I look what's happening, certainly at the national level, you know, there's a systematic attack, and it's going to start, you know, it's going to start with the most marginalized of the communities. So the fact that our president has gone after the transgender community is no surprise, and I think everybody should be afraid.
You know, other Democrats like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York have also had a historic win. Is this the right time now for new voices and new ideas?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, in the physics world, we say for every action, there's an opposite opposing reaction. Mm-hmm. What we're looking at in our political world is a definite reaction to what happened in 2016. People like myself and people like who are normally wouldn't be in politics are rising up all over. And I think that's what a healthy democracy looks like. I'm hoping that years from now we can look back and say, isn't American democracy wonderful? We survived a despot.
The most popular senator in the country easily won the Democratic nomination again last night.
Election night in America once again as primary voters in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Connecticut, and Vermont, where polls have closed, and we can now report that Senator Bernie Sanders has won the Democratic primary for the state of Vermont, which presumably is not breaking news for my next guest, the independent senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders. Congratulations on your victory.
Thank you very much.
It was a nail biter. I think you got 94% of the vote.
Something like that.
So this is one of those instances where you won the Democratic primary, but you don't run as a Democrat.
I have a long and kind of an unusual relationship with the people of the state of Vermont. Back in 1981, I defeated a Democrat and a Republican to become mayor of Burlington, defeated Democrats and Republicans. To make a long story short, I've always run as an independent. And that's what I will do, and I think people of Vermont understand that. We have a very good relationship with the Democratic Party. I suspect in this coming campaign we'll be putting more money, our campaign will be putting more money into the Vermont Democratic Party than anybody else. We're supporting a whole lot of good Democratic candidates, but I will run.
So you will decline the Democratic nomination?
Yes.
And run as an independent, as he always has. In all four of yesterday's contests, the Democrats posted huge turnout numbers dwarfing the Republicans. Again, more on yesterday's election results tomorrow with Howie Klein on the program. A Pennsylvania grand jury investigation, this story's unbelievable, released on Monday, alleges that more than 300 priests abused more than 1,000 children. This dates all the way back to 1947. CNN has more on this really disturbing story.
Officials are saying that this report is the largest, most comprehensive document into child sexual abuse within the Catholic Church that has ever been produced in the United States. This report took 2 years. It was written by 23 Pennsylvania grand jurors who listened to dozens of witness testimonies and witnesses and studied documents about alleged child sex abuse in six dioceses, which involved 54 of Pennsylvania's 67 counties. The report states that the testimony was heard from dozens of witnesses and 500,000 pages of internal documents were subpoenaed. It also states that there were credible allegations found against over 300 priests. Over 1,000 child victims were identifiable, but it's believed that the true numbers are in the thousands. Report states that most of the victims were boys, but girls were also victims. Some were teens, some were younger. Some were manipulated with alcohol or pornography. They were raped in various forms and fashions. And grand jurors found that church leaders in every part of the state preferred to protect the abusers and their institution above everything else, they say, because the cover-up was most important of all.
These petitioners, and for a time some of the dioceses, sought to prevent the entire report from ever seeing the light of day. In effect, they wanted to cover up the cover-up. They sought to do the same thing that senior church leaders in the diocese we investigated have done for decades. Bury the sexual abuse by priests upon children and cover it up forever.
The report states that because of the cover-up, almost all of the abuse is too old to be prosecuted. But the grand jury has issued presentments against two priests who allegedly sexually assaulted children within the statute of limitations. But there may be many more indictments in the future because the investigation continues. And one more thing, the attorney general said, you know, there's so many redactions in this over 1,300-page report, and we don't like the redactions. We want everything to be public. Yeah. So they're working legally to try to make that happen.
There should be no statute of limitations on raping a child. I'm sorry. It should be like murder. No statute of limitations. Sadly, we can't make it through today's What's News without a little bit more about former White House aide Omarosa, who alleged in interviews for her new book that she's heard a tape of Donald Trump using the N-word. Sarah Sanders was asked about that during yesterday's White House press briefing.
Sarah, have you asked the president if he's ever used the N-word?
The president addressed that question directly via Twitter. I'd refer you back to him. I can certainly say I've never heard him use that term or anything similar.
Have you asked him directly, Sarah?
The president, I didn't have to because he addressed it to the American people all at one time.
Why haven't you asked him directly?
Again, the president answered that question directly on Twitter earlier today.
Can you stand at the podium and guarantee the American people they'll never hear Donald Trump utter the N-word on a recording in any context?
I can't guarantee anything, but I can tell you that the president addressed this question directly. I can tell you that I've never heard it. I can also tell you that if myself or the people that are in this building serving this country every single day, doing our very best to help people all across this country and make it better, if at any point we felt that the president was who some of his his critics claim him to be, we certainly wouldn't be here. This is a president who is fighting for all Americans, who is putting policies in place that help all Americans, particularly African Americans. Right. Just look at the economy alone. This president, since he took office in the year and a half that he's been here,
Listen
has created 700,000 new jobs for African Americans. When President Obama left after 8 years in office, he had only created 195,000 jobs for African Americans. President Trump, in his first year and a half, has already tripled what President Obama did in 8 years.
Yeah, that's a lie. Liar. Sarah Sanders even had to apologize last night for putting out false information about black employment numbers under Trump, but she didn't correct them. So here's the truth. The White House Council of Economic Advisors took the blame for the mistake, acknowledging that black employment had actually climbed by nearly 3 million jobs under Obama. So Sarah, the liar, was only off by 2.8 million or so. Those numbers weren't the only thing she lied about yesterday.
What do you say to critics who see his attacks on Omarosa as part of a pattern of insulting prominent African-Americans, people he's taken criticized recently, including Don Lemon, Maxine Waters? He's claimed that football players protesting racial injustice don't know what they're protesting.
Look, the president, this has absolutely nothing to do with race and everything to do with the president calling out someone's lack of integrity. The idea that you would only point a few of the things that the president has said negative about people that are minorities, the fact is the president's an equal opportunity person that calls things like he sees it. He always fights fire with fire, and he certainly doesn't hold back on doing that across the board.
Omarosa did make some news yesterday during an interview with MSNBC's Katie Turr, in which she claimed that Trump knew about Hillary Clinton's emails before they were released by WikiLeaks.
You were instructed, according to your book, to bring up the emails at every point you could at the end of the 2016
that's
campaign.
Correct.
Hillary Clinton's emails.
Yes, that was our talker.
Did Donald Trump know about those emails before they came out?
Absolutely.
He knew about them.
Yes.
He knew what was coming out before WikiLeaks
yes.
released them. You're saying Donald Trump had a back channel.
I didn't say that. You did, but I will say that I am going to expose the corruption that went on in the campaign and in the White House. I'm going to continue to blow the whistle on all of this.
But how did he know about those emails? If he knew about them before they came out, how did he know?
You know, they're going to have a press briefing at 2:30. I'm sure you can have your correspondent as Sarah Huckabee
Sanders. Is that a question
Sanders.
You would ask?
Absolutely. I would ask a lot of questions. I would ask him why during this weekend, the anniversary of Charlottesville, he sent such a small tweet, but he spent all day tweeting about me. He could have condemned in a much stronger term and a clearer term that he is not a racist, but he squandered
right.
that opportunity. I think that there are a lot of things that the president should come clean about.
Were you ever asked about Roger Stone?
No, I was not.
Did you have any communication with Roger Stone?
I did not.
Could Roger Stone have been somebody that told Donald Trump about emails?
I think that Roger Stone right now is being investigated, and rightfully so. He has been one of those dark, shady characters in Trump world for a very long time, and I think that they have their sights set properly on him.
Okay, so the Omarosa there said, made news, saying that Trump knew about the emails before WikiLeaks released them. The president's attorney, the very strange man, Rudy Giuliani, told Chris Cuomo last night on CNN that that's a lie.
Omarosa's allegation is not in her book. We have seen no proof to substantiate what she alleges, but it is that she says with great confidence, certainly on television, he knew about the DNC emails before WikiLeaks dropped them.
I know she's lying.
You know she's lying.
I know she's lying because I was on the campaign more than she was. I was closer to him than she was. I was from about June to November. I was with him 24 hours a day.
Wait, what? What? What did he just say? From what?
From about June to November, I was with him 24 hours a day.
24 hours a day? I think they made more news. Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump are sleeping together. From June till November, they were together 24 hours a day. That's pretty fucking amazing, if you ask me. Back to his lying.
The first WikiLeaks exposure, he was completely surprised. He asked me, do you think there will be more? I told him, I have no idea. But I heard some reporter on CNN, Fox, I don't know where, saying Assange has a practice of putting out the weakest ones first. Then he builds it up, builds it up, builds it up. I said, I think this guy may have more than that. We were surprised every time he did a disclosure. She was not as close to him as I was.
Again, if, yeah, we heard
if,
you.
If she's saying this, and it's not in the book, never said it before. I don't know if she was interviewed by the special prosecutor or not. Be interesting if she ever said it to him.
Meanwhile, Omarosa is, is being muzzled now. The Trump campaign has filed for arbitration against Omarosa for breaking the nondisclosure. Now, she never signed the one as a White House employee, but she did sign an NDA as when she worked on his campaign. So we'll see where that goes, or if she's going to keep releasing these tapes. It's all a giant clusterfuck. I'm still obsessed with this, though. Uh-oh, I lost my little pointer thing here. There it is, this.
From about June to November, I was with him 24 hours a day.
We just learned something really disturbing, or Rudy Giuliani is lying. Go figure. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll listen to Brad and Desi in the Green News Report, and we'll be back with Tim Canova next.
The Trump administration has had the knives out for the Endangered Species Act for more than a year.
Administration using California wildfires to undermine endangered species.
The density of our forests is too high. The fuel load's too great.
And push for more aggressive logging. Amid record heat, Glacier National Park is now on fire. Plus, federal court orders Trump's EPA to ban a dangerous pesticide.
All of those dangers and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
People forget that trees are the things that are burning. That's why we have to clear cut them. Remember Smokey the Bear's motto, only you can prevent forests.
This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, before you get going, a little bit of business to get out of the way. I wanted to welcome aboard our newest GNR affiliate partner, KLDK, 96.5 FM in Dixon, New Mexico.
Hey, KLDK, welcome aboard.
That's up near Taos, one of my favorite parts of the country. What do you got for us today, Desi Doyen?
Well, first, another heat record shattered, this time in Glacier National Park in Montana over the weekend. The park recorded an all-time high of 100 degrees at Glacier National Park. And now a fast-moving wildfire has forced partial evacuation of the park. By the way, you may want to go see Glacier National Park's glaciers sooner rather than later, because thanks to global warming, most of its original 150 glaciers have disappeared. It's now down to just 26. 26. And it is expected to lose all of its glaciers within a few decades. Meanwhile, not surprising for Californians, but NOAA announced that July 2018 in California was officially the hottest month ever recorded in the state. That sustained record heat has made firefighting extremely difficult for those ongoing 16 major fires burning in the state. Smoke from those fires extends as far as New York City. California fire officials and forestry experts, firefighters and scientists all say that longer and hotter summers driven by climate change are a primary factor in worsening Western wildfires. But the Trump administration is denying the role of climate change and instead is using the fires as pretext for a full court press to push major policy changes that benefit politically powerful agriculture and logging industries.
Hate to let any good catastrophe go to waste.
Yep. Although the California firefighting agency CAL FIRE has repeatedly insisted there is no shortage of water for firefighting, Trump Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross last week directed federal fishery managers to waive endangered species rules for rivers. That, as LA Times columnist Michael Hiltzik explained in a recent broadcast, is actually a transparent cover to undermine the Endangered Species Act and justify diverting more water to corporate agribusiness operations in the Central Valley.
So the real subtext here is, once again, an effort to serve the growers. And the whole point of having an Endangered Species Act is to make sure that they survive despite all of these economic interests that are lined up to kill them off.
And then in a visit to California neighborhoods that were devastated by wildfire on Sunday, Trump Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke entirely dismissed climate change as a factor.
It doesn't matter whether you believe or don't believe in climate change.
Actually, yes, it does matter whether you believe or don't believe in climate change.
It doesn't matter whether you believe or don't believe in climate change. What is important is we manage our forests.
Now that is a euphemism for commercial logging, which Zinke made clear when he went even further in an interview with right-wing outlet Breitbart News. In a dangerous escalation of rhetoric, Zinke falsely blamed environmental groups for the wildfires.
We have been held hostage by these environmental terrorist groups that have not allowed public access, that refuse to allow harvest of timber.
Environmental terrorists? Really?
That's what he said. Now, actual forestry scientists say the exact opposite, that forest management is actually far more complex, climate change can't be ignored, and what's actually needed is more funding for comprehensive techniques like controlled burns, not more logging. And that requires more funding from the federal government.
So if we just listen to everything that the Trump administration says and understand it to mean the opposite, then we'd be in pretty good shape.
Then we'd be in line with what scientists say. Finally, some good news. A federal appeals court has ordered the Trump EPA to ban all uses of the controversial pesticide chlorpyrifos within 60 days. The court ruled that former Trump EPA chief Scott Pruitt endangered public health by refusing to ban the dangerous pesticide despite extensive scientific evidence that even tiny levels of exposure can harm the developing brains of children and babies.
Evidence schmevidence. For much more evidence on all of these stories, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
All right, we are back. Nicole Sandler here on this Wednesday afternoon. You know, it is early voting has started down here in Florida. I vote absentee, so I already filled out my ballot, and we return it to the supervisor of elections office in person just because I don't trust anybody with my ballot. I want to make sure it goes to the right place. I live in the 22nd congressional district. Ted Deutsch is my congressman. One district over, the 23rd district, that's where Debbie Wasserman Schultz is the representative there, but hopefully not for too much longer. 2 years ago, she had a challenger in the wonderful Tim Canova, who came pretty close, but there were some shenanigans with the ballots that went on that we'll find out about, because Tim Canova is running against Debbie Wasserman Schultz again, this time, though, not in the primary, but in the general as an independent. So let's find out what this is all about. Hey, Tim Canova.
Hi there, Nicole. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Now, you're not over here on the East Coast. You're on the West Coast of Florida right now, yes?
Yes, just for a couple of days. I'm right now in Fort Myers and have been touring around and inspecting all the devastation along the beaches and in the waterways. It's really something else. It's a combination of the blue-green toxic algae and the red tide. It's killed, thousands of fish. I think over 400 sea turtles, almost 100 manatees.
Oh,
wow. It's a terrible death toll. So it's something to see it for yourself. And we've had to wear face masks because, just for health considerations, when you don't wear the masks and you're around all this algae, very quickly you get headaches and all other kinds of symptoms. And last night there was a screening of a film called Toxic Puzzle, which links a bacteria in the toxic algae to a higher incidence of Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, and Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. Yeah, and this is happening worldwide. It's not just in South Florida. I think it's probably worse in South Florida than anywhere else that we've seen or most places. But I think this is a becoming all too common occurrence. The algae is being fed by the industrial farming that's going on with phosphates and nitrates and glyphosate all being dumped into the waterways through fertilizer runoff.
Wow.
So it's a big part of the problem in Lake Okeechobee. It's the big factory farms and cattle farms and sugar farms. And, of course, the big sugar farms are also south of Okeechobee, and they're preventing a solution to this problem by preventing basically the sale of those sugar lands to convert into the Everglades so that the water could flow naturally.
Now, is the
and filtrate naturally into the Everglades.
Is the do they believe that the cause is the same for both the red tide and the blue green toxic algae?
Well, I'm still learning. It seems like there are some similar factors. The red tide and even the blue green algae are natural occurrences.
Mm-hmm.
Even if human beings did not exist on the face of the earth, there'd probably be some red tide and blue green algae. But the scale of it has just skyrocketed along with industrial farming practices.
It's terrible. And now Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she's sort of in cahoots with the sugar industry, isn't she?
Well, she is. And we hit her on this 2 years ago. I wrote a piece that was called Debbie Has a Sweet Tooth.
Uh-huh.
And it tied her to big sugar donations. In fact, 2 years ago, I received a letter from the lawyers for Florida Crystals threatening to sue me for defamation, for basically repeating the facts. The fact is that the big sugar companies have indeed contributed to the pollution and to the failure to have a solution. And at the same time, these big sugar interests have donated millions of dollars to Florida politicians of both parties.
Hmm.
Over the past quarter century, I believe they've donated well over $50 million to both parties. And Wasserman Schultz has been one of their big, big politicians that they that they contribute to.
It's horrible. Has she? I haven't. Then again, I don't necessarily follow news about Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I'm sick enough about about our government these days as it is. But has she said anything? Done anything? Is she trying to figure out what's going on with our waters down here, or is that not an issue on her radar?
As far as I know, she has been incredibly quiet about the latest pollution coming out of Okeechobee and all of this destruction of wildlife. And the frustrating thing, of course, is that the Sierra Club endorsed Wasserman Schultz some weeks ago without doing any kind of a screening process. We never received a questionnaire or an interview. On the federal issues of concern to the Sierra Club, Wasserman Schultz has about an 80% positive rating as far as her voting along with them. But it's not a perfect score. And you take a look at some of the issues that the Sierra Club doesn't really rank in their, I suppose, in looking at her record. And they don't include the Sable Trail Pipeline. I've been one of the leaders against the Sable mm-hmm. Trail Pipeline. Wasserman Schultz has been completely quiet about it. She's been completely unreliable on fracking, and we've been right there with a lot of other folks trying to ban fracking in the state of Florida and nationwide. We'd like to see a conversion real fast to 100% renewable energy. What else has she been absent without leave on? She hasn't done anything to try to solve the problems coming out of the pollution coming out of Lake Okeechobee, the fouling of our waterways, the threats to the aquifer. Now, some will say, well, that's a state issue. What do you expect a federal representative to do? And I think that's a real cop out.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, a Republican congressman, the former congressman Clausen, introduced legislation at the federal level, which would have required the Interior Department to exercise the federal government's eminent domain powers to take the sugar farms for just compensation and to convert them into marshland, Everglades, and to restore the Everglades that way. And you know how many co-sponsors Representative Clausen got from the Florida delegation? Zero.
Oh, my.
I didn't see Debbie Wasserman Schultz introducing anything in that regard.
That's a shame, but that's typical. We're speaking with Tim Canova, who is running against Debbie Wasserman Schultz to represent Florida's 23rd district in Congress. But Tim, as I was mentioning, someone in the chat room who lives in the district said, "I didn't see them on my ballot," and I had to explain that's because you're not on the primary ballot. You're running as an independent. I know this is pretty.
Exactly.
There's a long story here, but explain to us what happened, because you ran against her in the primary 2 years ago, and it was a pretty tight race. So why run as an independent now?
Well, when the race ended in 2016, the official results were contrary to what our internal members were predicting.
Mm-hmm.
And our internal members were based on knocking on 10 to 12,000 doors a week and calling 2 to 3,000 voters a week. So it was an enormously big sample size compared to the very flawed polls that were done, the very few polls, which were based on just calling a few hundred people with landlines.
Mm-hmm.
And in this day and age, you know, that excludes an awful lot of voters,
yep.
Especially younger voters.
Mm-hmm.
So our internal numbers actually showed us winning and pretty decisively. And we ended up losing by 13 percentage points. So I decided to put in a public records request to inspect the ballots. And I did that because a lot of election integrity folks were contacting me and telling me that based on their own studies, their own statistical and demographic studies, they had doubts about the final results. And this was becoming, you know, a little bit of a headache for me. And it was like a drumbeat of folks contacting me, telling me that the election had been rigged and that they probably rigged it through manipulating the software of the computers, the electronic voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not an expert on any of this. So I decided, well, let's just inspect the ballots. We'll start with a dozen precincts out of about 200. And if they match up, there's not an issue. We can say that we verified the vote and let's move on to some other issues. To issues that are important to a lot of folks, like, you know, jobs and income and health care.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we put in the public records request, and the supervisor of elections of Broward County, Brenda Snipes, stonewalled us for over half a year. And I finally filed a lawsuit in the summer of 2017. While the lawsuit was pending, just days after we served discovery requests on Brenda Snipes, Brenda Snipes ordered the destruction of all the paper ballots cast in our race. And they did indeed destroy them at that time. And that's a violation of federal law and state law that require these ballots to be maintained for 22 months, punishable by jail time. These are felonies under state law. We're talking about up to 5 years in prison. Snipes also certified that the ballots were not the subject of pending litigation. That was a falsehood. She destroyed evidence in an ongoing litigation. That violates state law. It's just mind-boggling. How many statutes, federal and state, were violated by destroying these ballots. And we needed to see the ballots to verify the vote, because you can't really just rely on the scanned images of the ballots, because those can be very easily manipulated by manipulating the software. The software company, they won't share. You can't inspect the software,
right,
because
mm-hmm.
it's proprietary,
right,
and it's owned by the same software companies that the supervisor of elections hires. So without the paper ballots, there's no way of verifying the vote. And why would somebody commit multiple felonies to destroy the ballots unless they were hiding something even more nefarious? So when this all came to light, it came to light during the litigation. The supervisor of elections admitted to all of this under oath and videotaped depositions, and the Florida Circuit Court granted a summary judgment, and in the ruling, in a 10-page order, ruled essentially that the supervisor did indeed violate all of these statutes. Now, I was hoping at that time there would be some real investigations and real reform happening in Broward County and in the state of Florida. I wrote to all the Democratic Party officials in Broward County, in Miami-Dade, and in Tallahassee, as well as elected officials and Republicans,
mm-hmm.
Calling for them to join me in calling for a criminal investigation. And it was telling that not a single Democratic official even bothered to respond to my letter.
Wow.
At that point, So at that point, I decided to run as an independent. I thought, you know, the Democratic Party is really covering up this kind of election fraud. And there wasn't a single dissenter. I mean, everybody seems to follow the leaders of the party, and nobody would come out and even call for an investigation. So I took a look at the district, and the district, you won't be surprised, it was heavily gerrymandered to guarantee a lifetime seat for Debbie Wasserman-Schultz.
Mm-hmm.
Only 25% of the registered voters in my district, less than 25%, are Republican.
Right.
40% or so are Democrats. Just under 40% are independent. So it seems like an ideal district to try to break through the party duopoly. You know, you often hear that, well, if you vote for an independent, you're going to help elect a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this district, because it was so heavily gerrymandered, there's very little chance of a Republican winning this race, or maybe even taking second in a three-way race.
Right. So so you're not on the primary ballot, and she's not running. She's running unopposed now in the primary, right? So she doesn't even appear
on
the ballot.
That's right. Exactly. So it's really just a matter of the Republicans will choose a candidate, and then we'll have a three-way race in September and October.
And what do you have to do, Tim, to ensure that you're on the ballot as an independent? How did you have to qualify?
Well, it's already done. I was collecting signatures, or I should say our team was collecting signatures to put me on the ballot as a Democrat. But when all of this late-breaking developments in the ballot destruction case occurred, and I decided to run as an independent, at that point we decided we didn't have time to start collecting new petition signatures to run as an independent. So we paid a filing fee. I can't recall exactly. I think it was $5,000 or $6,000.
Wow.
So we qualified back in early May. I went to Tallahassee to officially qualify, and we are indeed on the ballot now.
That's great. I think, you know, I know people were wondering why, you know, why in that district. I had to explain to my sister, who doesn't pay close attention, but she's in your district, what's going on, and telling her, you know, okay, you need to vote for Tim Canova, but he's not on the ballot for the primary. So
thank you, Nicole.
So we wait till November 6th for that. But in the meantime, here you are. You're going. I see you at places around the district. Our friend Boca Brittany Summers put together a protest a couple of months ago. Out in front of, she found out that this was shortly after the shooting at Stoneman Douglas High School, the Kalashnikov Manufacturing has a factory in Pompano Beach. So she put together a little protest there. You were there. I saw you at a meeting of the Broward chapter of Progressive Democrats of America and the Progressive Caucus of Florida. You're out and about. You're meeting people. You're talking to people. You're doing the campaigning thing. How's it all going for you?
It's going fantastic. I got to tell you, wherever we go, people are coming up to me and telling me they voted for us last time.
Mm-hmm.
They're still with us. Our name recognition is through the ceiling, unlike, you know, at the beginning of 2016, when very few people had heard of me other than, you know, folks at Nova Southeastern University, where I'm a law professor.
Right.
But at this point, it really is district wide and beyond the district. It's all of South Florida seems. Many, I shouldn't say everybody, of course, but, you know, we have a much higher name recognition. We have very high favorability ratings. And Wasserman-Schultz's, you know, her name recognition, which has always been sky high because she was the head of the Democratic National Committee and a fixture in Florida politics for so long, I think her name recognition is now working against her.
Yes.
I think there are people who just want to vote against her, and they're very tired of it. A lot of folks had heard of us from the last campaign, had a good impression, but what really kept their attention was the ballot destruction case. I took a lot of heat for requesting to inspect these ballots. The Sun Sentinel and the Miami Herald called me a sore loser.
Oh, wow.
You know, and this is outrageous when you think about it. I mean, we all, as citizens of Florida, have both a statutory right and a constitutional right to inspect ballots, to inspect public records. And in exercising that right to just verify the election, I get attacked by the local press. You know, it really is outrageous. And in fact, it seems as if Wasserman-Schultz was trying to stop the litigation. In November of last year, the lawyer for the supervisor of elections offered to provide the court in my ballot destruction lawsuit, offered to provide the court with a sworn affidavit from Wasserman Schultz to try to stop the litigation. And you've got to ask, why would Wasserman Schultz be trying to stop this litigation?
Yeah.
Shouldn't she be saying, well, that's great. This is an opportunity to just put the ballots out there on the table to verify the vote. I won by 13 percentage points, and therefore I shouldn't be threatened by this. But that wasn't the reaction at all. They'd done everything they could to try to prevent us from looking at those ballots. And then when it looked like they couldn't stonewall it any further, they simply destroyed the ballots.
That's amazing. I still can't believe that happened. And Brenda Snipes, who you went up against, you suggested that she be replaced, mm-hmm. even though the governor is Rick Scott, Voldemort, as mm-hmm. I affectionately call him, it would have been up to him to replace her. But you think that would have even been better than having somebody who obviously put her finger on the scale for one of the candidates in the last election?
Absolutely, and I'm no supporter of Rick Scott. Quite mm-hmm. the opposite.
That's right.
I'm a very loud critic of a lot of his policies. We just started by talking about the water crisis,
yep.
and Rick Scott has a lot of responsibility for what's happened in the past few weeks, and well before the past few weeks. So I'm not a Rick Scott supporter whatsoever. Quite the opposite. But you know, he is the governor, and when you have a supervisor of election who has shown herself to be corrupt and inept, you can't just keep her in office because, well, you're afraid of who's going to replace her. This is just outrageous that somebody, Brenda Snipes is making $177,000 a year.
Wow.
And, you know, it's just outrageous that there's no criminal investigation, that there's been no, she should have been suspended by the governor right away and replaced. None of that has happened. And what's come back to me through the grapevine, through Republican circles, quite frankly, is that the reason the Republicans have not moved forward in replacing her and in starting a criminal investigation is that their friends are also friends with Wasserman Schultz.
Right.
That the corporate lobbyists and the corporate interests that support the Republicans are also the big backers of Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Democrats. So it's a real damning indictment of our political system at this point, that what we really have at the very top levels, I'm not talking about the rank and file Democrats and the precinct captains. I'm talking about the very top levels of both these parties.
Mm-hmm.
It's really one party. It's the party of big corporate money. And some of the leaders wear blue shirts and some of them wear red shirts, but they'll cover for each other. And they would much rather, the Republicans would much rather Wasserman Schultz remain in office and the status quo of rigging elections continues than to upset that apple cart by letting a progressive like me in.
Right. Now, Tim Canova, I'm guessing that if it were up to you, we do have paper ballots. We do the bubble things, but they're fed through these
yes.
optical scan machines and there's no controls on them. In fact, I'm holding a newspaper article in my hand about an 11-year-old who was able to hack into Florida's election system in 10 minutes. You have
yes.
Bill Nelson alleging that the Russians hacked into our systems, although he hasn't shown proof, although I have no reason to doubt him. I'm guessing you would prefer to have the paper ballots hand counted rather than use these electronic machines that are so easily hackable.
Yes, that's exactly the case, Nicole. We need hand-marked paper ballots
mm-hmm.
that are counted by hand in public
yes.
and reported at the local precinct level right away. And this is essentially the way our election system was run for many decades before electronic voting machines were introduced in the early 2000s. All over Western Europe, democracies have banned these electronic voting machines
mm-hmm.
for a simple reason. They're inherently vulnerable to hacking, vulnerable to software manipulation from the inside. And then you're not even allowed to inspect the software and to see whether there has been a hack
yep.
or whether there has been a software manipulation. So what does that mean? It means that we're left to just have faith in the system, a system that has not really earned our trust, quite the opposite. And we're supposed to trust it the way a child is supposed to trust that Santa Claus exists or something like that. It's way past time, you know, for big corporations and intelligence agencies, whether they're foreign intelligence agencies or domestic, to have the ability to alter the results of just about any election in this country at this point through manipulating software is just intolerable. The only reason to have faith is if you believe that big corporate interests or intelligence agencies always act ethically and they would not think of manipulating an election.
Sure.
It is laughable.
It is. Yeah. It is. That's why you have to laugh or you cry. And things are such these days that there's a whole lot of crying going on. I mean, 2 years ago when you were running, it seemed inconceivable that we'd be in the position we're in now, that Donald Trump would ever occupy the Oval Office. I'm wondering what keeps you awake at night these days most.
Well, as you could, it wouldn't be too surprising. What keeps me awake is the idea that we could win this upcoming election in November and they could steal it again.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to prevent that from happening. So we've got a job and a half on our hands. First of all, 2 years ago, we raised a lot of money, $3.8 million.
Right.
And there was a lot, it was all in small donations. Online, over 209,000 contributions with an average donation size of $17. Wasserman Schultz's average donation size is over $500.
Wow.
And even though we raised, you know, almost $4 million, when you add up all of Wasserman Schultz's campaign committees and PACs and super PACs, she still outraised us by perhaps close to 2-1.
Wow.
And we may have beaten her and it may have been stolen. This time around, we're not raising that kind of money. And the main reason is because there's been a news blackout. The mainstream media has blacked us out. 2 years ago, I was on MSNBC and CNN and Fox very regularly.
Yeah.
And each time I'd be on those cable shows, the campaign would go more viral and we'd raise more money. This time around, even the news of the ballot destruction, even the news of the court granting a summary judgment, none of that has resulted in you know, cable TV rushing to our door and asking to speak to us. So it seems like a very calculated strategy by the corporate-owned media to black us out, and it has made it much more challenging to raise money. And even though we're being outraised by perhaps 10-1, let's keep in mind that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was outraised 10-1 in New York, and she still won.
Yes, she did.
I have every reason to believe we can win this election in November. Preventing it from being stolen is the bigger challenge,
I
believe. And we're working with a group called Democracy Counts, a nonprofit, nonpartisan group in California that's developing the software for smartphones, an app for smartphones, so that we can put together a citizen's army, essentially, to do a citizen's audit of the election. And we're hoping that that will deter any kind of flipping of the vote, any kind of manipulation of the software. And if that kind of manipulation does occur, we're hoping our citizens audit will help root it out and help us challenge it in court.
Well, great.
So we need folks to go online to timcanova.com, make their contributions, even if they're small contributions, spread the word to others, go to Democracy Counts, contribute to their efforts best you can. We're going to try to get the Carter Center and other groups to support the Democracy Counts citizens audit as well.
Have you had any? I know that Howie Klein's Blue America PAC has endorsed you again. Have you gotten any other help from any of the other progressive organizations, the PCCC or Democracy for America or any of the other groups?
The local Our Revolution chapters have endorsed us, Broward County and Miami-Dade. But it's been much tougher sledding with some of the other groups. I think many of those endorsements are top-down endorsements, as we described at the Sierra Club. No questionnaire, no endorsement process. And it's been the same for the most part with a lot of the unions as well. So I'm not too worried about it. I don't think endorsements win elections. She got Wasserman Schultz got more endorsements than we did last time. If you counted up the number of them, But I think a lot of the groups that endorsed her, the rank and file, were really with us the whole time.
Right. Okay. Well, it's Tim Canova. You know him from 2 years ago. He's back. He's running again. This time as an independent, so he's not on the primary ballot. But this time he will go head-to-head against Debbie, not through the Democratic Party, but in the general election on November 6th. We need to get Tim's name out there. You can follow him on Twitter at Tim Canova, C-A-N-O-V-A. The website is timcanova.com. Tim would make an amazing replacement for Debbie Wasserman Schultz in the U.S. Congress and a great representative for South Florida. So, Tim, anything I can do to help, I'm here. I'll encourage everyone to donate as much as they can and to get out there and vote. Tim, thank you so much. Thanks
Nicole, thank you. As I described this mainstream media blackout that has slowed our campaign down, it makes it so much more important for us to get the word out in other ways. Mm-hmm. And what you do and other folks like you do in the alternative media is so important right now. It's more important than ever before. You just see the range of opinion that's allowed on mainstream media, on television and cable and in the newspapers, is getting narrower and narrower. You can't even question the official narratives anymore without sort of being blacklisted the way we have been, the way my campaign has been. And that's what makes the truth-telling that you do in your show so important. And I very much appreciate you having me on.
Well, thanks so much. It's my pleasure. And we'll talk again soon. We'll definitely do it again before November. Thank you, Tim. And thanks for all you're doing.
Thank you,
Nicole. Okay,
bye-bye. Bye-bye.